Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show, Summer Special. Today, we're looking back on a jaw-dropping Saturday. In the Champions League at Barcelona, famous short ass shows his class in Turin. Juve, after a rough night on Friday, fall back on a nice cool Pirlo. With Bayern steaming through to the quarterfinals as well, we're all sorted now for the final eight of the Champions League and the Europa League, and we'll be looking ahead today to Monday's action with Inter Bayer Leverkusen and Man United Copenhagen. It's all in the Totally Football Show Summer Special in association with Paddy Power. Well, here we are, listener. Sunday morning for you, 9th of August. For us, still Saturday night, fresh from the final two last 16 games in the Champions League. We're joined by James Horncastle. Hello, James.
Good morning.
Also with us, Jack Lang. Jack, lovely to have you back.
Lovely to be back, James. Thank
That's
you.
That's great news. Nils Harald, that's right, of Danish Eurosport. He'll be along a little bit later on as well to tell us what Copenhagen are saying about their big Monday clash with Man United. They couldn't, could they? We'll be talking about that very shortly. But so much to discuss from Saturday. Obviously, the Champions League, but also, courtesy of our friends in Turin, one of the more jaw-dropping moments of the season. Maurizio Sarri out, Andrea Pirlo in. It's a bit bonkers, but I have to say, it just sounds brilliant.
It really does. I'm excited. I know people have got a lot of questions about the appointment and his suitability for the role, but it's just great to see Pirlo bronzed, his hair sort of coiffed back in a suit. After what Pep Guardiola was wearing on the sidelines, I think, you know, we can comfortably say that there will not be a better manager on the sidelines in a European Football League next season than Andrea.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it could go in so many ways, but it's going to be a fantastic ride. And it's also curious how it seems to be always the managers now that give us the really kind of, oh my God, did that just happen moments. You know, player transfers, you kind of see them coming from sometimes from months away. But it's the managers who give you moments like today when you stop. Oh, my God, they've done what? Andrea Pirlo in. We'll talk about, you know, the whys and wherefores of all of this and, you know, salute Maurizio Sarri and all that a bit later on. But right now, we've got some Champions League to talk. Let's begin with Barcelona-Napoli.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Goal number 634. I make that for Leo Messi. Saturday night against Napoli. Few, even for him, I think were better than that. Absolutely extraordinary goal. Interesting game this. Barcelona marching into the quarterfinals with a 3-1 win over Napoli. Napoli had started strongly. There were doubts over Barcelona's opening goal, a foul by Longley. But after what Leo Messi did, they all seemed a little bit less relevant.
Did you honestly think there have been few better goals than that score by Messi? I think that's solidly mid-table.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing. So he goes
where he almost loses possession and falls over.
Yeah, no, not that. I mean, he goes past, maybe I'm easily impressed, maybe it's recency bias, but he skips past three defenders, gets knocked to the ground, gets back up, is challenged again, and while falling over, produces this impossible shot to a part of the goal that he can't even see. Pass to, is it Manolas? I thought it was great. Yeah, all right, he scored some amazing goals. It was a good goal.
I think it was a good goal. I think it was showed his doggedness, which I think is an underrated facet of Messi's game, the fact that he does just bounce up from most challenges. And yeah, great goal. But I think with Messi, there is a danger in exalting every goal so much that we do slightly lose track of, you know, he's dribbled past five or six players and slotted it into the top corner 20, 30 times in the Champions League. That goal is, I don't think will necessarily make the career-long highlights packages. I quite liked his disallowed one as well, but that was mainly right about the pass from De Jong.
All right, well, lovely outside of the boot flick from De Jong across the penalty box to awaiting Messi, who kind of chests his way past the defender. And then a lovely finish on that one as well. But call back because VAR. Jack, you didn't enjoy the VAR and there was plenty of it in this game.
I rarely enjoy the VAR, James, as I'm sure you know by now. But the penalty was an interesting one. I think it is a penalty, but I don't think it was... I don't know. I think those cases aren't as crystal clear as sometimes people think. The fact that Koulibaly is the one kicking, you know, he does kick Messi, and I think on balance it's probably fair. But I think you could mount an argument whereby Koulibaly is in possession. He is legitimately striking at the ball, and Messi kind of intervenes into Koulibaly's movement towards the ball. Messi doesn't touch the ball.
Right.
You know,
Jack,
obviously.
As wrong-headed as you thought my take on Messi's goal was, I have to say that your take on this penalty... Koulibaly was in possession of the ball. It takes so long about it that Messi steals in front of him, and Koulibaly then kicks him in the back of the leg, and he goes down. So it's kind of a penalty.
Yeah, perhaps what's happening is the fact that I'm feeling sorry for Koulibaly is slightly clouding the judgment. But I think those things happen quite often, and I'm not certain they're always penalties. Probably in this case it was because Messi is very close to the ball. But, you know, it's not necessarily because Koulibaly is the one doing the kicking. You know, if you interrupt someone's kick earlier in their kick, for example, it's normally the interrupter who gets pulled back.
Well, they took 4 minutes having a look at it, so I'm sure they got it right in the end.
At least they had a look at it, James, which is not what they did in Turin on Friday night.
That's true. Napoli had started the game well. They got a penalty at the end of the first half, which gave them the proverbial lifeline. And the start of the second half saw them dominating once again, but not to any great effect. I think they ended up with one shot on target for the entire game. It's sad to see them exit in this fashion. And what do you make of Barcelona's performance as a whole, given that next up they're going to be facing Bayern Munich?
Well, I think Bayern remain favourites for that game. I know Jack wants to see Barcelona kneecapped, as he put it on Twitter. I think that will happen in in Portugal because I think Bayern are too good. I thought Barcelona actually were better than I was expecting tonight, in part because they have just got, as Lorenzo Insigne just said on Italian TV, they've just got so much imagination, so many inventive players. And De Jong tonight caught the eye. Certainly looked up as Lelia Dani, the Sky Italia commentator, was going, "De Jong, un principe," which was exactly what I like from Adani. But on the whole, I still think Bayern are just a much more better put together outfit. They should have too much. And it might be reminiscent of, you know, when Bayern went on to win the treble and absolutely kind of took apart an out of sorts Barcelona side, which I think they're kind of reminiscent of at the moment.
James is right that I would like to see Barcelona defenestrated or some other posh verb of that ilk. I just think they're ripe for the taking, and I think it would be just desserts, really, for the decadence, the poor transfer dealings, and just the lack of direction on the pitch, which I think was really evident tonight, even though they had enough quality to get over the line. I'd like to know from James what he made of Napoli, because this was probably a bigger opportunity than they made it look in the end. And I found them to be a little bit polite, I think would be the phrase, like the front three never really ruffled Barca's feathers, and I just wonder what James thought went wrong there.
And it was a shame that they didn't, because that's going to be the last time we see that front three play together. Cajon, Insigne and Mertens, and they've given Napoli fans and just casual football fans around the world so much joy over the last, 6 or 7 years. It's odd that they kind of showed them too much respect, to use kind of standard football parlance, in a stadium that was empty, because that was something that Gattuso was saying was an advantage for Napoli going into the tie, that they would be able to control their emotions better and not be intimidated. And by the same token, there wouldn't be a crowd to kind of get a rise out of Barcelona. I still felt it was quite nervy at some points for Barca. But at the same time, I don't think I was ever truly convinced that they could turn the tie back around. I wonder if that kind of first 20, 25 minutes of Messi doing Messi things basically made them insecure. And I think, unfortunately for them, a theme of their season, it started this way and it's finished that way, is that Koulibaly hasn't been the Koulibaly that we kind of have become accustomed to over the last 5 years.
Well, just Atalanta left in the competition now, representing Italian hopes. Barcelona will be taking on Bayern at the Estadio de Luz next Friday. The only two former winners left in this competition, Bayern, who were 4-1 winners on Saturday over Chelsea. More phenomenal stuff from Robert Lewandowski in this one. Of the four goals, he assisted two and scored the other two, which means the seven goals from this tie that Bayern have scored, he's either assisted or scored them all. Incredible. He's now on 53 goals for the season in 44 matches. We were focusing on the Barcelona game, but Bayern's status as favourites, I think, for most people, they're in the tough side of the draw, but Barcelona next, then either Man City or Lyon, and then in the final, Paris Saint-Germain, Atalanta, Atletico Madrid or Leipzig. It's hard to see who's going to stop them based on another performance like the one today.
Yeah, I think they were very impressive. What was interesting, given how the first leg went, I wouldn't have been too surprised to have seen to see Hansi Flick rest a couple of players, but he picked a very strong side. And I think it felt like a statement, a reintroduction to Europe. Obviously, they bowed out on a very high note, but this was, yeah, very, very convincing. Chelsea, in fairness, did make it quite easy for them. You look at the replays of the goals and the spaces and the Chelsea defence are enormous. And when you have a player of Lewandowski's quality, let alone all the, you know, the guys around him helping, I think that's pretty much a dream evening for them and kind of starting to get their momentum back. So yeah, they do look very dangerous. I think, you know, I'm not sure they'll beat Barcelona 7-0 like they did in 2013, but I would have them as fairly solid favourites after what we've seen tonight in that game.
Well, next up in this two-week festival of football, it's back to the Europa League. That kicks off in Germany on Monday night. We'll be looking ahead to Man United's clash with Copenhagen. Of course, next season's Champions League is already underway as well. Irish champions Linfield winning Saturday, beating San Marino's Tre Fiori 2-0 in Neon. So that's nice. Very shortly, we'll be talking up Monday's Europa League action. Next up, though, let's get a little bit deeper on that business in Turin.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive excludes shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Summer Special by the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Life comes at you pretty fast, department. July 25th, Sarri wins the Serie A title with Juventus. August the 7th, Juve drop out of the Champions League. Less than 24 hours later, he is fired. Less than 5 hours after that, the club appoint rookie manager Andrea Pirlo, who'd only just signed up to be their under-23 boss. Handed now one of the biggest jobs in the game. It's bold and exciting, as we said at the start, James. It also does sound a little bit mad because he's never managed before.
No. The last time they did this was with Ciro Ferrara, remember, and that did not go down particularly well. That was pre-Andrea Agnelli. In fact, it was, you know, kind of how bad Juventus were doing at that time that motivated Agnelli to put his name forward to become president and basically completely transform the club into what it is again today. I feel this has been coming, maybe not Pirlo, but certainly with Sarri. I mean, we've spoken about how unconvincing they have been all season. In fact, you know, even when they appointed Sarri, we kind of put forward our scepticism about it and just how, in terms of a cultural fit, it didn't seem to work. And, you know, even though he has won the league title, I think he will be remembered in much the same way that the former Verve Clicquot salesman Gigi Maifredi was, who got the chop after a year for failing to deliver the champagne football that everyone was expecting.
That is harsh.
But I think when it became palpable that Sarri was in real trouble, was actually on the day that they presented Pirlo to the media as the under 23 coach, because Sarri was giving his first press conference since Juventus had won the title. And it was, you know, sort of a normal kind of day, business as usual, and no fanfare. And then he left, and then Pirlo came in with literally everybody. Andrea Agnelli, Fabio Paratici, the chief football officer, Fedio Cherubini, who's like the head of the under-23s, has become very influential at Juventus. And it felt like they were already unveiling a first-team coach then. And I still find it very surprising that they've made this decision. Ultimately, I think they've done it for a number of reasons. We haven't seen the football we were associating with Sarri from his, particularly from his time at Napoli. It didn't really justify the change that they made from Allegri last year. All the things you think about that make Juventus great, their defence completely collapsed. Sort of relationships with some of the, not only the star players, but some of the fringe players, I think have become frayed, particularly over the last 6 months. And, you know, he's admitted on a few occasions, hasn't he, after that first leg against Lyon, that he wasn't able to get through to the players. And I think it then became clear that Juventus were maybe going to have to abort this experiment just a year in. And to be honest, they haven't had much time in order to prepare succession, because already by the end of this month, you know, they're due back for pre-season. So in some respects, it's not a change that they'll have taken lightly. But they need someone who knows the club, and Pirlo does. But as we said, we don't really know what to expect, and he'll inherit a lot of the same structural problems that Sarri had over the course of the last season.
Well, he's already in the club, and he's already on their books as well, so it'll be cheaper than a lot of the alternatives would have been.
And also, one of the positions that Sarri was crying out for investment in was in the Pirlo role. So, you know, in some respects, you know, Pirlo can, maybe they're trying to kill two birds with one stone, James, and he can be player manager.
Perhaps. Curious destiny, though, for Maurizio Sarri in his last two jobs. A manager beloved at clubs like Empoli and Napoli, where he essentially won nothing, but at the clubs where he's actually brought some silverware, seems to have gone down very badly indeed.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's, personally, I've got a fair bit of sympathy for him, even since, you know, the Chelsea days and Kepa Gate, and just the way in which his tactics were not given much shrift by the Chelsea fans at times. But I was thinking about this earlier, and then I thought, actually, you know what, maybe deep down, maybe he's not too disappointed by this. He's got the trophy itch scratched already at Chelsea. He's now won a league title, you know, done so without an enormous amount of drama, even if they made it close in the end. And, you know, I think he's got two massive payoffs. One of those doubts over him is, you know, he didn't have any titles to his name. He's got that now. And if I was him, I'd be looking to go back to what he knew and loved, which is, you know,
banking.
Banking and smoking. But no, find a club with an identity, find somewhere that he can, you know, mount a project, somewhere maybe slightly off the top Champions League clubs. Go to Marseille, go to Bilbao.
Fiorentina,
a club where he can maybe construct something again in his own image and doesn't have to be dealing with the kind of strict scrutiny that clubs like Juventus clearly have.
Somebody pointed out on social media, it's curious that Chelsea, in the kind of shock of their post-Sarri reaction, went, kind of fell back on a cherished former player. And that's exactly what Juve are doing as well. Paratici, has been briefing about how the club think that Pirlo is predestined as a manager in the same way that he was as a player, a natural talent who almost doesn't need any coaching or training. What indications do we have about what kind of football he might play and how, if it will fit any better with the squad that he'll be inheriting?
Well, he's spoken about playing possession football, that he's not wedded to any particular formation, that ultimately his influences have been Carlo Ancelotti, Marcello Lippi. So guys who essentially look at the group that they've got and try and create a very strong team spirit and from that kind of sense of unity, build something special. I think the other thing that he's kind of said, which again is an intangible, is, always playing to win, which, I'm sure Maurizio Sarri did. But for the last 6 months, I think one of the main concerns at Juventus was that they were losing winning habits. For example, they would get in front and just switch off. And allow teams back into games, too casual, or when they'd already won the league. In contrast to other years, they didn't keep winning. They basically just were like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. And I don't think that was acceptable. I think they'll look to him to bring back a relentlessness to this Juve side, but also they want the club to kind of play in his image. Which is some image.
You're listening to the Totally Summer Special by the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Monday sees the Europa League Final Eight begin in Germany. Among the many exciting fixtures is Man United up against Danish runners-up Copenhagen, who put out Turkish champions Başakşehir here with a thrilling performance just last Wednesday. Could they spring another surprise? Well, let's dial up our friend Nils Harald of Eurosport Denmark. Well, Nils, thank you for joining us. A huge game on Monday.
Yeah, it's huge, and nobody expected this. Everybody was kind of expecting the Europa League to be over for FC Copenhagen. They knew that the Manchester United game was behind the Başakşehir game. But because of the bad season FC Copenhagen had, nobody was expecting this to happen. So yeah, it's huge and everybody is looking quite forward to this.
All right. Copenhagen looked really good in the second leg against Başakşehir last week.
Yeah, and it was a big surprise because it really was a bad season. They had big trouble in the Superliga. Was in a huge row of games without winning anything, and they finished at second place, which is bad for FC Copenhagen if Midtjylland won the league. And everybody was expecting that this season was almost over now. It was like, okay, let's get the last game done. But they came out, they had a week off, everybody went home and went back to training after a week of vacation, and the injuries were cleaned up. They had vital players coming back, Nikolai Bøjlesen coming back, Jonas Wind was coming back, and suddenly everything seemed to click against a side that really wasn't up for it in the park. Mm.
So a surprise Danish side in a summer knockout tournament. We've heard this before, haven't we? Do you think that Copenhagen could spring the surprise against United?
I think it's 20-80 in percent. It's like it's a good United team. It's a very, very good United team. And even though Ståle Solbakken know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer very well, they text each other regularly. They go back a long time in Norwegian football, those two coaches. I think they're just too good for FC Copenhagen. But, last time they won 1-0. Last time they played, FC Copenhagen won 1-0 in 2006. So you never know. And it's the feeling here. It's like nobody is expecting anything, but, it could happen. You never know.
Right. Solbakken's an interesting character. I read that he's promised his win bonus to the team if they do defeat Man United. Yeah. And he also knows all about coming back from the dead because he literally did as a player.
Yeah, he was dead for like 6 or 7 minutes. That's a lot. I think it's like 20 years ago he was playing and he fell about in the training ground. Luckily, there was a club doctor there who got him back to life, and he was operated in the heart and got a pacemaker, and now everything is going well with him. And he's going very strong, and he's very healthy looking and very good. He's a good coach for FC Copenhagen, has been that for many years. But that was a miracle. I mean, that was touch and go for him.
Mm. You mentioned Jonas Wind before. Two goals for him in the game against Pasaksha here. Magnus Falk also impressed in that game. What about their approach, Niels, on Monday? Against Celtic, it was very much you have the possession, but we'll take the win, as they knocked the Glaswegians out of the cup earlier on. But there was a much more bold and outgoing approach against Pasaksha here.
Yeah, and they felt that the opposition wasn't really there, so they could go for it. And they did, and they had an early goal. And, you know, that changes football games. So an impressive game. And it was not typical of FC Copenhagen because they like to stand deep in the European games, especially when they're away from home.
Right. OK, well, we'll see on Monday then. Have a great match. You're going to be working on the game for Danish TV.
Yeah, I'm working on the script right now for the evening. We'll be doing a 2 hours preview, and it'll be on Discovery's channels in Denmark, and it'll be huge. It's a big game. I mean, it's what we all live for, isn't it? And it's not 1992, but who knows?
Well, there you go. Niels Harald of Eurosport Denmark. Jack, is this the bit where the Europa League gets fun for you? Man United up against the plucky Danes?
Yes, I think so. I do keep an eye on the Europa. I think the Europa League goals show, 1 hour highlights package during the group stage, is probably the best hour of television out there, because it's just like,
what, of any genre?
Yes, yeah, it's up there. It's definitely up there, because it's just an hour, because the Europa League is so big at the group stage. They've got so much to pack in. It's just the perfect number of replays for each goal. Like, they don't dilly dally, and it's just third tier Brazilian imports scoring ridiculous goals for like Bulgarian clubs. Anyway, but yeah, this is clearly where it gets a bit more interesting. This, I mean, the Man United fixture is not the most compelling one coming up. We'll talk about Inter Leverkusen in a minute, but yeah, I think this does look like a very winnable clash for United, given the main issue towards the end of the season was the fact that they looked dead on their feet, and most of those players have now had a rest. A few extra days, because most of the first teams didn't play against LASK. I'd be surprised if they didn't make fairly short work of Copenhagen.
All right. Well, the magic of cup football, of course, is that anything could happen in Copenhagen's first ever European quarter final. Meantime, the other game Monday night, Inter against Bayer Leverkusen, we'll be discussing that after we hear from Lee Price of Paddy Power.
It all gets a bit juicy now in the Europa League. Suddenly, we're all interested. The first match on Monday evening, Inter Leverkusen, we make neither side odds on, which is usually an indicator of a close tie. Inter are the 11-10 favourites. Leverkusen, who bashed Rangers, are 9-4. That is pretty close. The other game, though, less so. United are 2-9 to beat Copenhagen. And let's face it, that's probably value you'd expect them to win. Copenhagen 9-1 to put off a huge shock. And as for the finalists, you can bet on who they will be. The favourite pick, of course, is United and Inter at 12-5. But some interesting combinations in there. Inter and Sevilla, for instance, couldn't rule that one out, 7-1. Wolves and Inter, 15-2. Or how about this? Sevilla and Bayer Leverkusen, 9-1. Juicy.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, then stop. Inter are in Dusseldorf on Monday night, taking on Bayer Leverkusen. Jack, have you seen much Leverkusen? Did you see their last 16 clash against Rangers?
I've seen bits and bobs of them, especially in when the Bundesliga was back. They're a good team. I like them. They're a little bit hot and cold, I would say, but they've certainly got lots of great individuals. Obviously, Kai Havertz, with people know plenty about him by now, and we're probably going to know even more
who?
About him.
He's, Frank Lampard has just told Archie Rintoot, formerly of the BT European Football Show, that he does not expect Kai Havertz to be joining Chelsea.
Okay.
Curious.
But it's not just Havertz. Moussa Diaby is a really nice player who's impressed me since the return to football. A lot of pace, two-footed, like the look of him a lot. And I've always had a soft spot for Charles Arangues, the Chilean midfielder. He set up Diaby's goal against Rangers with a gorgeous kind of inside-to-out pass. And I think if he had had a tiny bit more physical presence, he would have been a midfielder for one of the top clubs in Europe, I think. But he's just ticks under the radar, but a lovely player on his day. And I think this has the potential to be a very, very open, good-looking contest if both of them play to their attacking potential.
Okay, fingers crossed. Leverkusen, with the slight advantage of the fact that they're playing kind of down the road from their own home, although obviously no fans present in the stadium. James, how convinced were you by Inter's, on paper, comfortable 2-0 win over Getafe earlier in the week?
Well, I thought that it was a complete team performance. And what I mean by that is they needed their goalkeeper to make a couple of very good saves. Also, Molina, the veteran Getafe striker, missed a penalty. But saying that, they actually played pretty well. There were a lot of kind of good individual performances. Alessandro Bastoni, their young left-sided centre-half, had a hand in both goals. Lukaku scored a kind of classic of his goal-scoring repertoire, if you like. And they were able to overcome, you know, what is quite predictable these days, which is, you know, opponents basically try and shut down Marcelo Brozovic, their Croatian playmaker, and stop Inter playing that way. And they overcame that either from, as I said, their centre-backs becoming playmakers or going out wide. So I'm really intrigued by this clash because it is one of those games where you look at Inter's history and tradition, you look at the investment that they've made in the summer, you look at their manager, you look at the talent that they've got available to them, and you know, you respect Leverkusen for what they are, which is a sort of finishing school for the top four in England. And yet, it's exactly the kind of opponent that Inter tend to go out to. So it's a real big measure of their maturity and how far they've come under Conte. They did actually, you know, pretty well, let's not forget, in the group of death in the Champions League away from home, where they would often get in front at half time against Barcelona and Dortmund, only to then throw that advantage away, which of course had nothing to do with Antonio Conte. It's because the club hadn't spent enough money in the summer and were only buying him players from Cagliari and Sassuolo. Look, Inter should be qualifying for the semi-finals. They should be going through to the final and winning and at least keeping the Italian flag flying high in a way that, say, Juventus and Napoli have failed to do over the last two nights.
You referenced before the game Christian Eriksen's problems under Antonio Conte. He came on slightly earlier than of late in this game with about 10 minutes to go and immediately scored. Would that help his prospects at all?
Well, he's been obviously been criticised quite a lot, and Conte doesn't seem to have a lot of faith in him. I think it was important for his confidence to get a goal. It just again goes to show the kind of depth that Inter have got, because they could bring on him, bring on Alexis. So they've certainly got firepower. But I'm still not entirely convinced where he fits in at Inter, because I think one of the reasons why they've rebounded a bit towards the end of the season was Conte's experiments with this kind of 3-4-1-2, he basically just said, it's not working. Let's just go back to what was doing well for us before, just a straight 3-5-2. And they started winning, they looked more solid. And obviously that's to the detriment of Eriksen. So, look, I think he'll, at this moment in time, he'll still be the option off the bench rather than a starter.
Well, winners of that clash will be up against Shakhtar or Basel in the semi-finals. Meantime, whoever makes it out of the Man United-Copenhagen game will have the pleasure of taking on either Wolves or Sevilla in the semi-finals. Wolves taking on the Andalusians, of course, in Tuesday's quarter-final. Monday morning, can I mention that, James, you and I will be kicking off a brand new Club 2020 daily show, 11 o'clock on BT Sport 1 and on YouTube, in an exciting kind of Jaffa Cake styled studio overlooking, well, Stratford, really.
Yeah, we did a pilot yesterday, which it felt like this morning with you as Richard, me as Judy. I don't know.
There's a Sunday supplement table. It might actually be the Sunday supplement table.
Yeah. Lord knows, with pomegranates, which I don't think you'd ever see on the Sunday supplement table.
But anyway, so there's that. And of course, Monday night, we'll be back with the Totally Football Show Summer Special, reviewing those first two Europa League quarterfinals. Do hope you join us for that. Jack, it was lovely to see you again today. and I hope you'll be with us again soon. Have you got big plans for this extraordinary fortnight of football?
Watch a lot of it.
Good.
Just to go on your daily show. It starts early, huh?
11 in the morning.
How are we got to keep that going all day, huh?
Well, it's only an hour. It's only an hour long.
Oh,
it's not like an FA Cup build-up.
I was banking on you being there all day. That's a shame.
Well, I mean, we could, obviously. But 11 to 11.45, viewer, if you want. That's it for today's show. Many thanks, Jack. Thank you, James Horncastle. Thank you, producer Charlie. And thank you, listener. Have a great Monday. We'll catch you on the other side.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.